right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Blind Side Blitz. I am Jim McPhee, and of course, alongside of me is Mr. Joe DiCapita.
What's going on, Blitz Nation? Welcome back yet again. We are locked and loaded, ready to go right here. Before we get started, I want to just remind everybody, maybe you guys can spread the word a little bit, but you can join our show. Make sure you subscribe to us on YouTube or Rumble.com. Also, we're brought to you by our partners, our buddies, from grumblingsmedia.com. Make sure you head over to the website, check out all the best in political, entertainment, and sports. That's what this is all about, joining together and moving forward and growing this great channel of ours, especially on YouTube, especially and anywhere you can get your podcast. That's right. You can take us with you on the go. If you don't have time for us right now, we're live right now. Make sure you drop in the comments. Let us know that you're live. If you have any questions, if there's anything you want to talk about, make sure you drop the comments down. Also, Apple, Google, Spotify, Pandora, you name it, make sure you drop a follow there as well to link up with us on Blitz Nation here at Blitz.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, baby. It's all blitzing all the time, man. We're like, we got the audio, you know, we got the video, we got everything.
You know what's funny is that I think we can officially say that we've been labeled as the Blitz Boys.
Oh, the Blitz Boys. That's what everybody's saying now, right?
Yeah, that's like the new thing now, I guess.
Okay, I can deal with that, I guess. That's kind of funny, but sure. Joe, yeah, we were supposed to be live last night, but, you know, we had a tough because of the effects from the hurricane and all that stuff. Moving up towards here, New York is affected. Big storm. I get out of the grocery store and it starts downpouring. That's where it's going. It was funny. It's because I'm checking out, right? And this is a quick story before we get into it, but everybody's going to appreciate this. I'm checking out self-checkout and I hear it in the store just. And I'm like, holy crap, it's going crazy now out
downpour.
There, right? So everybody happened to do the checkout at the same time, too. So I get into that area before you get into the store, and there's a line of shopping carts, and everybody's, like, afraid to go out there in this monsoon.
Everyone's waiting.
Yeah, it's, like, in a line, and, like, stuff there, like cattle. And I'm like, dude, I got to go. I got to stay here and wait for this thing to end, right?
Right.
So I'm there with my son. I'm like, you know, we're just going to go. Ready? You get this. So we get out to the outside now, and there's still an awning and everything above us, and we're kind of looking for that moment. There's still cars kind of going by, and as the cars are going by, they're like pushing water waves everywhere. Yeah, I'm like, so it went from like rain to like flash flooding like super fast. So we're like, we're going for it, and we ran. And again, once I walked out there, though, the puddle just goosh, and instantly, you know, when you walk in that puddle and you got your socks or your shoes on, you feel it instantly turn into a sponge, and it just soaked up everything in there. And I'm like, oh no,
never
you
a know? Good day.
Yep. And then meanwhile,
not a good time.
My son's got Crocs on, and for him, it was a good idea there, so he don't care. He's just got the Crocs and everything.
It's like he's swimming out there.
Yeah, so I mean, it was fine for him. We're soaking wet, getting the car and everything.
Right.
It was crazy, but. But, yeah, unfortunately, power was out for a while. We weren't able to have internet, so we weren't able to go last night. But we are prepared to do it tonight, and we are lined up for a doubleheader. We got two shows back-to-back tonight, so we're ready to do double time just for all you guys out there. So,
putting in the work.
Woo, put in that work. Absolutely. Here we go. So, you know who's been putting in the work, too, which I think he hasn't been really appreciated by his team as much because we're hearing about this. It's Brandon Ayuk. You know, and he's got requests. He officially now requests a trade after talks with the 49ers have been stalled again. You know, he's been trying to work something out, and the 49ers standing true on this and not, you know, giving him any respect on this stuff, Joe. So now it officially is, you know, he's out there and wants to be traded. So we've had the talks where, oh, could he be? And the 49ers, totally not interested in doing that. And I'm sure they're still on that same wavelength right now. They've got to be like, no, he's not budging. So what do we do here? You know what I mean? So what is the situation here for these guys?
I mean, it's real simple. Like, San Fran, of course, doesn't want to move on from Brandon Ayuk. Of course, they want to work out a deal and keep him there for the future. But the issue is we've noticed this whole kind of storyline unravel way back before May even happened. Like, that's kind of like the last pinpoint of the story where we can, like, all right, well, that's the last time they talked. And as a player, I can only you know, surmise that if that's the last time you talked contract or even had a conversation like, hey, we're interested in signing you for the long term, little bit of, discrepancy there. Like, there's been no real negotiations or talks about a new contract since May. That, at least that's what some people are reporting right now. If that is the case, I mean, I don't know. I would feel a certain way if I'm Brandon Ayuk, be like, hey, you guys really don't see me as a major part of this offense going forward. Like, if that's how you guys feel, then that's why we say here's like kind of like this little flag moment for Ayuk saying, no, I'm dead serious. Let's work out a new deal. Otherwise, I want to be out. Now he's officially requested that trade, and Niners are still taking that stance with John Lynch as the GM saying, hey, no, we are not looking to trade Brandon Ayuk. We want him to stay. Well, then let it be known to the Brandon Ayuk, at least, to his agent at least, like show some consideration for the player and say, hey, listen, we just want you guys to bear with us a little bit longer. Like we're trying to work out some things financially to figure out how we can get you guys more money. But we're at this crossroads right now with the San Francisco 49ers there, where they keep saying like, yeah, we don't want to trade him. But at the same time, Ayuk's like, well, let's do something then. Let me go somewhere where I can be given a bigger contract that is worthy of my talents. Let me go somewhere where they're going to utilize me and respect the fact that I am one of the top end weapons in the league, because he doesn't get the respect around the league in terms of people saying like he's one of the best. Mm-hmm. Because let's face it, he's not in a high level of passing type of offense where like he has these crazy inflated numbers all the time. No, that team is very physical. It runs the ball. It mixes up the run and pass. But again, I just think that from at least Ayuk's camp, he's like, well, then let's just get something done then and let's move on. But this is the interesting part of this whole storyline, is that training camp's right around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Will Ayuk show up? Because it's one thing to say I demand a trade as another way of like maybe kind of stirring things up and saying maybe we're going to start to get some conversations going. But now with training camp right around the corner, if he doesn't in fact show up to a practice, then you know this is for real. Right. Then you know this isn't just a stunt where he's like trying to get the Niners to hurry up and try to make an offer. So what's interesting to me is what is he looking for as a wide receiver? You know, he is a really good player in the NFL. Right now he's currently making $14 million, which obviously is cheap for high-end wide receivers.
Mm-hmm.
Debo, of all people, is making 20 already on the roster. Now, he's another one where Niners might have to make a decision pretty soon, pretty early. Are they going to give him an extension? Or should they stay with the younger guy? And Brandon Ayuk is 26 years old, in his prime. Give him a deal, maybe about $25 to $28 million a year. Maybe that'll be suffice enough to get him to lock down. But then again, like there's so many rumors out there right now with Ayuk's name, with certain scenarios. Like mm-hmm. if they mm-hmm. were to trade him, we're hearing rumors about there's been multiple teams, and of course there is, right? A guy of that caliber, of course there's going to be a line of teams calling for interest, calling to see what they want for compensation or what have you. But interesting scenario popped up as of today where it does involve Davante Adams possibly being in talks with the Raiders, also contacting the Niners and maybe utilizing Adams to get Ayuk in some form or fashion. Maybe it doesn't include Adams, but it's still something that's interesting to talk about, because if the end game is Niners and Ayuk can't make amends, they can't get anything done, the trade thing is going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what teams might do it? Obviously, you're going to look at teams. It depends on compensation, too. Like, are you looking at 2-1s for this guy? You know, are you willing to work and negotiate maybe a 1 and some change?
Mm-hmm.
So players are also could be involved, so – it's interesting, this whole dynamic of with Brandon Ayuk and how this relationship that was once ironclad is now kind of has a rift in it at this point, and we won't really know until training camp rolls around.
Right. That's where you're going to see really how true these guys are on this whole thing. Yeah, because once they start losing money, that's a different story. And it's how he sees himself. And it's obviously got to be bigger than what we're expecting, because we're hearing the last offer that was made to Ayuk by the 49ers was around $26 million annually, right, which I think is fine. That's good. That's where you can put him right there, because then he's around Devonta Smith. And Jalen Waddle was right there. So
who just got deals,
just big deals, and that's still good. And where his talent, I think, really meets, you know, because again, some people are putting him as a guy that's just kind of already on the back end of his career and like kind of starting to get what I'm like, what are you doing? Like, because the other story we're hearing now that instantly a team that has reached out to the 49ers was the New England Patriots. Patriots could easily use a wide receiver, absolutely. And, you know, they
a number one
guy
too.
In a while, they don't have like a number one. We talked about that in our preview with the AFC East and the Patriots, and they are ones that jumped on it to make a move, and they're willing to pay him what he wants, even too. So, but Patriots fans on the other side are saying, "Hey, we're in a rebuild. Let's not get desperate right now." You know what I'm saying? Like, why do we need to even do this on this part? Which I get that aspect too. But the 49ers, it's tough for them because they're running into the same thing that the Cowboys always deal with too. When you're teams that are so good for so long and you get this great talent, time's going to be coming where these guys are asking for that money. It's hard to keep the band together. But the good teams really move on after letting some of those guys walk and still build and get that team going without that guy. Are the 49ers willing to walk from, you know, or trade away Brandon Ayuk and still get it going here and say, you know, we can deal without him not being there? Yes, he's a big weapon, you know, a big asset to the team. Absolutely. But you've got a hell of a lot of weapons out there, and you can't pay everybody. So who knows what it will take. We'll find out, I guess, in the upcoming weeks, especially if he doesn't show up, what we're hearing from other teams, what they're offering, and what, you know, the 49ers could, even though they're saying they're not going to trade him at all, what are they asking for? They have to tell somebody, you know, if it's astronomical, we want a one or whatever that. All right, if you want a one, then why aren't you paying them like a one, you know? It'd be interesting.
Real quick, I want to talk about the Patriots since you brought them up with this whole scenario. What made the Patriots dynasty so good is that they knew at the perfect time when to let a veteran go, when to not pay him, because they were aging. They started to like, all right, well, we're not going to pay this X player anymore. We're going to let him go test free agency and let him go. Niners are in that same kind of situation where they're in the Super Bowl window that they have right now. They have a plethora of talent. They got a lot going for them right now, where they're going to have to make some decisions. Now, the smart thing, I believe, for the Niners would be to lock up Brandon Ayuk, being he's still in his prime at 26 years old. Debo Samuel's a little older. You know, he's getting closer to 30. And are you really going to want to pay Debo Samuel going forward, you know, more than $25 million a year on top of giving Ayuk a deal, where you have more shelf life with Ayuk. So you might as well stay with him. And just take into consideration that you also drafted a up-and-coming player in Ricky Parasol from Florida, who I think fits their offense tremendously well. Bigger body receiver, very strong, a guy that can just make plays and has one of the best set of hands coming out of this draft. But maybe he develops into that starting caliber role. Maybe not right now in his rookie year, but going forward, next season, he can take over. And that's where you can kind of let a veteran go, like maybe Debo. And I know he's very important for their offense. But, again, you got to look at the future, the near future of this team, to keep this team rolling forward and keep it playoff relevant. You're going to have to make some of these tough decisions.
Right, and if you look at that in that aspect, Debo Samuel's a lot of injuries too. You know what I mean? True. He has been injury prone, and like you said,
the way
he is more longer in the tooth than an Ayuk. So you pay the younger guy, keep him there, and then Debo, you say, you know, go find someplace else to go, you know, try and get your payday if you want. Or if you want to keep this group together, and you can approach these guys that are getting there. You know, we see Devontae Adams, you bring him up again. He knows, and he's admitted it on the receiver show, that, hey, I'm on my back nine here, closer to being retired than to do, you know, be on my youth, you know, so I need to win, you know, a Super Bowl soon. So do you go approach Debo Samuel after you get a deal done with Ayuk and say, You ready to take a team-friendly deal, you know, hearing this
right.
and see what are you going to do to keep it together? Because I think this is a good nucleus of guys that we have what it takes. We've been there twice. And then even to what, the championship game, too, to lose. I mean, so they've been to this mountain multiple times and just cannot get it done. Come to them and say, hey, this is the year. Give us a discount here, and we will bring you to the promised land. And that's probably the better approach on this whole thing instead of, again, like you said, piss off the younger guy here that has a little more, you know, in him and hasn't been injured and still making spectacular plays out there.
Now,
consecutive years of 1,000 yards receiving and everything, Joe. I mean, you don't get that everywhere.
And here's the thing is, like, he's still 28 currently, so he's not yet at 30, but he's close to 30. And he has – he has a couple of void years in 26 and 27 on his contract. His last kind of deal, he turns 29 next season, and that will be his last year under the current deal that he has. He'll be getting paid $16 million, so it's a little bit cheaper next season in terms of cap, but at the same time, or at least that's his base salary. He gets paid $24 million in terms of cap salary, so little bit cheaper, about $4 million cheaper. But however, that's the thing is, like, this guy is getting close to 30. Do you want to give – it's hard for any team to afford two big-time contracts for wide receivers. So I think that the Niners want to re-sign Brandon Ayuk and keep him for the long haul, make it work, because they still have a bunch of money under the cap as of currently. So they can afford to give Ayuk a deal and keep Debo for at least next season, until that conversation has to be had. But again, I'm curious to see the big turning point, or I should say climax, for the Niners and Brandon Ayuk is training camp. If he shows up, then you know that he let them know it with a trade request, right? He let them know, like, hey, I'm serious. Let's get this done. Otherwise, I'm not playing for you. But if he shows up in training camp and saying, okay, well, I'm playing along. Now it's your guy's turn. Ball's in your court, great. Then you could take a guess and say, okay, they're going to eventually get a deal done before the season even gets here. But if he takes a standpoint of saying, not only did I give you a trade request, but now I'm not showing up until we get a deal done, then things are going to take a turn for the worse.
All right, we've got Back to the Stone Ages with us again tonight, Joe.
What's going on, Stone Age?
All right, what does he say? Yo, Blitz dudes. Ayuk.
You boots dudes. He goes, Ayuk whines too much. I'm doubting his testosterone levels.
Oh, man, dude.
Wow.
Wow, man.
Shots fired.
What? Oh, well, but wait a minute. Does he have a Raiders thing on his symbol or something?
I'm going to say.
Does he have a Raiders fan? Is he a Raiders fan? Because, you know, you got the Battle of the Bay, so I'm not telling.
It's just a skull.
It's just a skull, so I'm assuming.
So there's no ties there.
I was going to say, because the Battle of the Bays and things like that, who knows what could happen there.
No, but it's an interesting scenario that's happening right now, and with a big-name player. And that's why everybody is, like, kind of all over this story right now. But, again, we're going to wait to see what training camp, what happens there. But we've told you all the scenarios of with Ayuk and the Niners, so I'm curious to see what happens next.
Yep. All right, so we brought up the fact of Davante Adams now might potentially be in this whole mix-up with Brandon Ayuk. So let's just bring that up quick here before we get into our AFC South divisions here. The trade rumors now about Davante Adams have arise after even Aaron Rodgers' comments. As it was kind of weird. It's that cryptic stuff that Aaron Rodgers kind of does. He's like, yeah, Davante Adams, yeah, I can't wait to play with him again.
Can't wait.
What? Like, what do you mean, get to play with him again? Stuff like that. What do you mean again? You know what I mean? What's that mean? You know, what are you doing? Are you trying to get him there? You know, what's going on? So that pops up. But then also, you see what happens on the wide receiver show. I know, Joe, you and I had talked about this off air real quick, and I just started getting into it, so I haven't gotten that far into the series. You've binge-watched
the whole thing.
I know a lot of people have, but I'm behind on a lot of that stuff. So, it's funny when you see some of these players get upset on the sidelines. You're like, oh man, he's just upset. Yeah, I can get that too. But when you get to hear them mic'd up and some of the things that they say, and you know, then after the game's already done, they got the interview that they're doing in front of the camera, and where he said, like, I brought up that He's on the back nine. He doesn't know how much time he has left. He wants to get it going. He wants to do something here. So then you start to think, like, well, does he want out or not? I mean, and you hear from his camp that, no, he's sticking tight and that he wants to be a Raider, which I get too. But, again, you he's got to have that father time kind of thing, you know, weighing on his mind always too.
I mean, his whole standpoint throughout that thing is he just wants to see progress. That's all. Like, you noticed a big time change in the locker room for Devontae Adams and for the Raiders when they did in fact fire Josh McDaniels or McDumbass, whatever you want to refer him to as. But after Antonio Pierce took over that team, it was like a switch flipped. The offense played much better. The defense took a huge step forward. They were already good, but then it just seemed like they just played so much more freely and just better. Because there was nobody kind of – like McDaniels, what the problem with him is that he was too hands-on with everything. He didn't want Patrick Graham, the D coordinator, to play defense a certain way. You know, his offense, he wanted nobody to audible. He wanted it to be exactly how he called it. No changes. And that led them to a lot of losses. So he ended up leaving. And then AP, when he took over, just changed everything, said, hey – Patrick Graham, I trust you. You do your thing. The defense played better. And then Mick Lombardi, who was calling the plays going forward, he said, we're going to change some things up and we're going to be aggressive. And you just noticed an instant change there with that team. Now for Adams and his agent, I don't know how many times Adams has said this publicly. He said it in interviews. He said it on Twitter. Yeah. He just keeps saying, no, I'm locked in with the Raiders. And then for the agent recently who came out on Twitter and said, no, my client is dead set. We're locked in with the Raiders and nothing else. So for the new rumor that's now being, you know, spun around with Aaron Rodgers saying, oh, I can't wait to play together once again on the same team. And Adams kind of – he definitely feels like it would be an amazing thing to play once again with Rodgers. Doesn't typically mean it'll be with the Jets. Now – that's what everyone's going to allude to because Devontae Adams is 32 years old. He is at the end of his career, much like Rodgers, because Rodgers is old too. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they want like probably one last go of it together. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that I can think of is there's two different ways this could work. Is next season, when Devontae Adams' contract jumps up with a big number now, like cap number is going to be around $44 million. That's crazy for any wide receiver to make. Mm-hmm. Either the Raiders are going to renegotiate his contract to lower that cap value, or are they possibly looking to trade him? Where it might be to the Jets, not this year, but next year. Or do they redo that deal and now try to work something out to get Rodgers in there? Where you can still, whether it be with the Jets or with the Raiders, is where I see it happening. I just don't know what scenario, one way or the other, if it's realistic.
Yeah. Now, do you think now? So let's say that we play this season out, and it gets around trade deadline, and the Raiders aren't doing anything. Do you think then this topic pops up again, and then say even the Jets are playing well on the other side?
We expect the Jets to play well.
Yes, exactly. So you think this deal might happen then because, again, season's already there. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to take a smaller cap hit than what it was before, and you were going to think about unloading him before anyways. So do you go after it now, and then is it pull the trigger? Do you think Devontae now is kind of like, all right, get me out of here, and I can jump on this train with Aaron Rodgers and like nothing ever happened? I'm sorry, Max Crosby. You're my other half, you know, but we could still be friends or twins, you know, twinning, you know, on the opposite side of the country here.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible. Mm-hmm. It's definitely possible because let's just say the quarterback experiment that is Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell right now, they're really pinpointed on those two guys fighting for this starting role coming into the season. Now, let's just say they both fail. Like, neither one of them – no matter who ends up being the starter, if they struggle and then they make a switch and then they still struggle on offense with all the weaponry that they have, there's no excuse for it, right? And they have just like a terrible season. Like somehow, some way they just go well below 500. Week 7 is right around the corner. maybe conversations are starting to be had behind closed doors where Devontae goes to the owner, Mark Davis. Devontae talks to AP and says, listen, man, I can't keep doing this. I'm doing everything I can do and holding up my end, but we need a better quarterback. I want to be out. If that is to occur, then you definitely could see a trade kind of evolve where he does get sent to the Jets. It's going to be kind of pricey. It's not going to be for super cheap because the Raiders have invested in Devontae more than just contractually, also mm-hmm. with their draft picks that they traded for him. So mm-hmm. they're going to look for some kind of a, not exactly the same return, but something similar. And maybe it happens that way. Or maybe they're just like, let's redo a new deal where, and we don't know what's going to happen going forward because it would take the Raiders quarterback room to completely fail altogether this season. If that was to happen, then you could start to make this be a case where it makes more sense. But if Aiden O'Connell takes another leap, and let's mind you, last year he was a rookie. Like mm-hmm. he hasn't been in the league. People are talking about him like he's been in the league for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
He played one season and did very well when and Josh McDaniels wasn't there. So if he continues to develop, I already know he's got the confidence of Devontae Adams.
Yeah.
And they do play a little bit better this year. That gives them hope. Now maybe there is no more conversation with that. You know, it's dead in the water. They don't have to look to maybe even possibly, like if Adams is happy there and they redo his deal, they don't even have to pursue Rodgers. They can just continue going on. This is what they want to happen.
Yeah.
The likely of it happening is a whole other story, but this is intriguing because even last year, rumors were circulating. Oh, Jets are going to go all in and trade for Devontae Adams
mm-hmm.
before the draft got here. That mm-hmm. was like the big thing.
Mm-hmm.
When are they moving on from Devontae? Never happened. Not even close. Jets did call the Raiders. They definitely spoke about possibly trying to make it work. Just never happened. And now here we are once again, rumors circling around Link Rodgers and Devontae yet again. But then again, no evidence of even having a conversation
yep.
about it.
Yep.
And it seems like Adams is pretty happy at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it'll be interesting. I'm seeing I'll be excited when the season starts to see what happens with this, if it does develop into something else, or even see what happens with your Raiders,
if
too,
it goes if, the
it,
other,
if it does.
That's the other thing,
real,
too,
you know,
is if it goes successful. Let's just say it goes the other way.
Mm-hmm.
The quarterbacks fail.
Right.
But they have the team where they could win.
Mm-hmm.
They just need leadership. They need a new quarterback. Mm-hmm. And how quickly you can change that room is with a vet. Now, if Rodgers became available, if Rodgers was available, the Raiders probably would pursue that. And then, obviously, you hear the rumors about Dak Prescott also being involved.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, yeah. I mean, so imagine if that storyline plays out at the end of the season. So we could have a bombshell of a season, an off-season next year after all this is said and done.
Doesn't it feel like – every,
we see that every year.
Every
right?
off season. Well, hold on. Every off season for the last 2 years have been incredibly chaotic. Have been absolutely amazing with interest mm-hmm. and trades and new signings to other teams. So I'm pretty sure it's just going to continue.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So I mean, that's the more storylines. Let us know what you think in the comments too. What do you think? Do you think Devontae goes? Do you think he stays? And Ayuk, what do you think about that as well? We already heard from Back to the Stone Age what he thinks of Brandon
right.
Ayuk. But we shall see what happens, you know, further on.
Definitely.
But back now to the topic. We were here to start with this show tonight. We've been going through the AFC first, and we've been previewing all the divisions. We've done the East and then the North, and now here we are on to the AFC South divisions, Joe. This is a real tight, exciting division to talk about. I'm super excited.
Right on. Yeah.
And let's just get right into it, and let's talk about the Houston Texans first here.
Yeah, Texans are going to be a fun team this year. Not everybody was on their bandwagon last year, having a rookie quarterback come in, and they had some interesting talent up and down that roster. And, man, they just really capitalized via draft, via free agency. And the development of their rookie quarterback in C.J. Stroud, nobody anticipated how good he was going to play. some people, like even on our show, we thought he was going to do very well, but we didn't think he was going to do this well. For a rookie, this is a rarity, and he just came in like a gangbuster, like just literally took the league by storm as a rookie, made very, very limited mistakes, capitalized on almost everything, and had a great cast to work with. All very young. Look at the receiving core. Nico Collins had a tremendous year last year. Mm-hmm. Tank Dell did before his injury. Yeah. But now he's groomed to come back 100% healthy. And they also don't forget about guys like John Metchie III, who was up and coming and developing and coming back from injury. He's going to obviously be in this rotation. Ben Skowronek, which is a interesting name to keep an eye on, got traded from the Rams. He's more of a big body possession type of wide receiver, but makes the chains move. Definitely going to be impactful. And then we can't not say his name, right? You know, Stephon Diggs, mm-hmm. who from the Bills, everybody knows Stephon Diggs, mm-hmm. a true number one, a veteran in this league and seen as one of the better wide receivers in this league. He's going to team up with this young core of wide receivers at the same time, tremendous depth behind them. Look, they even have Robert Woods penciled in as the fifth, sixth wide receiver. Like, it's just crazy the amount of depth that they have at this position. And we have to give props to the coaching staff. Mm-hmm. D'Amico Ryans in his rookie year as a head coach, taking over this team, grooming the defense as well as coaching and leading the offense to many victories, to many surprising wins. It's been amazing for his, you know, his catalog and his, you know, job history to go along with another yet very talented offensive coordinator and very young in Bobby Slowick, who worked extremely well with the quarterbacks, with the offense, and then a new face to the defensive coordinator position. Mm-hmm. Matt Burke last year mm-hmm. did an amazing job following D'Amico Ryans in his steps. It is an amazing coaching staff that they assembled. It's going to continue this year. And when you look at this offense as a whole, when you look at their offensive line, they got even better. Mm-hmm. They're in the interior offensive line, very young, very, very stout. But the tackles, right, to me, are the only kind of concern that you could bring up for this offense is injuries, where you have Laremy Tunsil, where you have, on the other side, Titus Howard. Both guys that are veterans that have been there, that have done it, that are Pro Bowlers, those guys, if they can stay healthy, man, oh, man, this offensive line is super good, along with all these weapons. Mm. And then we got to look at, obviously, we talked about Stroud and touched on him, but Dalton Schultz, a tight end, had a tremendous year last year. That's going to continue. Yes, you have all those receivers, but you also have Dalton Schultz, who was a big-time favorite of C.J. Stroud to distribute the football to. And then, oh, yeah, the backfield. What are they going to do there? Oh, I don't know. They have Damian Pierce and Joe frickin' Mixon mm-hmm. from the Bengals. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a two-headed monster not a lot of defenses want to face. And all in all, with that whole offense put together, they not only got better, but now they're even more dangerous than they were a year prior. So there's nothing, as a Texans fan going into the season, you got to be super confident, super hyped. And say, okay, who's going to stop us this year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing. You look at the team all together as a whole, and they're the complete package. And then, like you said, but then there's more. They add on to it. When the running game was good enough, when you look at the young Damian Pierce right there running all over the field, you got Joe Mixon, the veteran now, so you can even sprinkle him back and forth with these two guys and go 1-2 punch. Mm-hmm. And what really was key for them is on the offensive side, no, you know, C.J. Stroud going, 23 touchdowns and 5 turnovers, so eliminating their turnovers and winning the turnover battle on the offensive side, and that defense keeping them in the games and being the number one ranked defense against passing touchdowns as well, so stopping other teams from scoring, keeping them in the game, and like you said, that rookie playing so well in pretty much mistake-free football and keeping them in the games, and you only think that they can learn from that first playoff game here. These guys weren't expected to be there. They kind of got punched in the mouth when they got there by a tough Baltimore team. But now they can maybe come back here from this and learn from that and get back there and build with these additional weapons that they have. Or like you said, the rich get richer, and here they are. Mm-hmm. They didn't need some weapons like that, but it definitely doesn't hurt, especially when you've got a rookie quarterback playing the way he is right now and on that rookie deal. So that is key with a lot of teams here to get that going quick with you. Get that rookie to perform well early on that contract and get him some help around that you will pay and set you up for the long run as well. And that's how we've seen these dynasties work. We're watching it being portrayed here now with the Kansas City Chiefs right now. So they're at the top of the pinnacle right now, the guys that need to get knocked off the mountain here by some of these teams. And a lot of people think it is the Houston Texans.
Yeah, and then if you go to look at their defense, and that's the thing is like, okay, well, how could they improve on this defense? They bring over none other than one of the best pass rushers in the game, Daniel Hunter from the Vikings, to team him up with a guy by the name of Will Anderson Jr. that you might remember from last year, last year, made a huge impact. But now they're teaming up with Daniel Hunter. Oh, my God. And then you look at the interior, guys that aren't huge names around the league, but let me tell you, they are difference makers. Danico Autry, Foley Fuadakasi, like they are big-time heavyweights in the interior. Those guys are going to pay off huge dividends for them. And then their linebackers, Christian Harris, Azeez Al-Ashir, guys that might not be household names, but guys that get the job done, guys that D'Amico Ryans himself handpicked for this defense that they like to run. And then you look at their secondary, which is very young, by the way. So the motto of this roster is youth for the most part. Yes, they brought in some veteran leadership, but Derek Stingley Jr., healthy yet again, is going to lock down. Very dangerous. And then Jalen Petrie, who had a season cut short last season. But, man, this is a very young and up-and-coming safety in this league. And are they glad to see him back in the lineup? Teaming him up with veteran Jimmy Ward, formerly of the 49ers, this is just unbelievable on how they still have the youth, but any holes that they might have had, they didn't just fill them with vets. They filled them with proven vets that can still play at a high level.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the rookie coming in, Kamari Lassiter, who I know from the Texans organization, have had their eye on this kid coming out of the draft very intently, because even though he doesn't have great top-end speed, he's very instinctive. He read and reacts and is very rarely out of position as a corner. So that cornerback position right there, along with Jeff Fokuda, who they acquired, they're going to battle it out in training camp. May the best corner win. But whoever does, I got all the confidence in this world in this defense and this offense to take themselves to the next level.
Absolutely, Joe. So that'll be an exciting part of this division to watch. So next, let's move on to the Indianapolis Colts. And the Colts, again, were one of those teams that kind of surprised me on the end of it, because we wanted to look at this rookie and see what they're going to get, you know, out of him and stuff. Richardson goes down early after a few games.
Mm-hmm.
He looked pretty good, you know, some turnovers, but some, you know, but had promise, it looked like. But then just a hodgepodge of some, you know, quarterbacks here and there. And Gardner Minshew, though, really shined, you know, and did really well. And he kind of rejuvenated his career. He's kind of been there on the spotlight here for the Jacksonville Jaguars, and then moved on as a backup here throughout the league. And it seemed like he was just going to be stuck as that backup role that can kind of get you where you need to get to when he's in the game, but not enough to be your guy to rely on. And he really performed well, and you could see the difference in this team when he was out there. And he brought fire, too, and that's the one thing you could always see about Gardner Minshew when he is in the game, you know, that he did this. But he's not there anymore, so now you've got to go back to that rookie and Richardson. We hope to see him this season be what we kind of started to see last year and kind of lead this team back here. And it's kind of funny because despite, you know, some of, you know, the rankings that we see with this Indianapolis Colts team, I think they were ranked 27th overall, stuff like that, they were kind of just doing a lot. Like, if you see a lot of their pass rushers and their guys on the defensive side of the ball, sacks galore, just spreading the ball around, just getting pressure. It's just just coming up on a shoot and end of the stick, I guess is the only way to do it. You know, even when it get down to the red zone, they had a pretty good, top 15, I think, red zone defense here. So, but just bend and then eventually break. But they were a good team last year. I'm excited to see what's going to happen when you get this team together with that young quarterback.
Yeah, and you bring up the fact that, like, they struggled a little bit with the red zone and everything, and Gardner Minshew was leading that charge.
Yes.
Gardner Minshew actually helped them out win some games that they probably shouldn't have won. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, like, Minshew, like, you could even label him as probably one of the best, if not the best, backup quarterback in this league, because there's not a whole lot of good quality backup cues. And Minshew is kind of like one of those guys where people don't talk about him because he's been a backup for quite some time now, and they even kind of forget about Gardner Minshew, right? Like, he is capable of starting for a team. He's capable of helping a team win, but he's never going to be that pinnacle at quarterback where you're like, okay, we can win a Super Bowl with the guy. Not saying that he couldn't, just saying that he's always been viewed as that backup style. So it's sad that Richardson had his season cut short, yes. He was a rookie last year. He's still a guy that has to further develop his game when it comes to mechanics and footwork. He's got tremendous throwing power. There's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. Probably had the strongest arm coming out in 23 by a landslide. Like, the guy has just a cannon for an arm. But more than not, you look at this guy's physique. Look at how big this dude is. Like, super tall, super strong. And it's not like he's just, oh, well, he's kind of just heavy. He's chiseled. Like, this guy has a physique that he belongs as a even like a linebacker or a D-end of that nature. So, but he's super blazing fast. He's one of these dynamic guys that you can't teach size. He already has that. Mm-hmm. He's got tremendous mobility for his size, runs a 4.440. And, oh, yeah, it's got a cannon for an arm. So I think we can work with this, with Shane Steichen being the head coach, being a guy who's seen it from the likes of, like, a Jalen Hurts.
Mm-hmm.
They love his mobility. They love what he brings to the table. It's just a matter of further developing his game, which, by all reports, I know it's OTAs and what have you, but it seems like he's getting a better grasp of the playbook. He's looking a little bit more loose and not so, you know, stagnant or confused or anything like that. He's playing more freely. So within the offense that they do, and it's also nice to have a veteran backup in Joe Flacco. Mm-hmm. Like, Joe Flacco is a huge insurance policy. Yep. We've seen what he could do with the Cleveland Browns and how he helped them kind of get to where they ended up. But man, it's going to be crucial and critical for Joe Flacco to help Richardson grow as a quarterback. He's going to mature faster, and he's going to teach him the nuances of being a pro Q, which I think is going to pay huge dividends. And what was the biggest weakness of the Colts for years? Wide receiver. They just never seemed to have a good group of wide receivers. Now you look at this team on paper, at least. Michael Pittman Jr. got his extension. He's locked in as that number one wide receiver. Kind of just continues to get better every year. And then now you're going to pair him up with guys like Josh Downs, who had his season cut short. But, man, Anthony Richardson, that was his, like, favorite target is Josh Downs. And in that slot role, the guy that's very difficult to stay with, look for that connection to continue. And then in the second round of this year's draft, Adonai Mitchell, who got drafted from Texas, mm-hmm. a mm-hmm. blazing speedster of a wide receiver, a guy who could easily take the top off of defense. Watch for him to kind of progress and get involved as a starter this year as a rookie. The only thing that I have a question about Adonai is the fact that in college, sometimes he would drop easy passes. He makes all these difficult catches, but then once in a while, he's wide open by himself and just kind of lets it slip through his fingers. Hopefully they kind of work on that in training camp and get him locked up and ready to go. But man, you look at what they have in the starting lineup, what they have even in terms of depth. Alec Pierce was the starter last year. Looks like now he might lose a starting job, but at least he'll be involved in the rotation, along with a younger gentleman they took in the fifth round, Anthony Gould, who I think could develop very well for them too. Offensive line, this is a concern of mine. I'm sorry. I can't overlook this. Their interior of the offensive line is amazing. I think they're super solid. The tackles, to me, just haven't developed. Raymond Bernard, the Braden Smith, those two guys, they were beat up, but also at the same time, they were giving up big time plays to pass rushers. Just like it, and at times looked like they weren't even existing there. Like they just kind of weren't even involved. So that to me has got to be concerning coming into this year. Now, if you ask the Colts, they're like, oh, we have no worries. We're going to be fine. They're developing. They're getting better. But what I saw last season as an NFL fan watching some of their games, I'm like, what's going on? Gardner Minshew had no time to throw at times where it was just like a revolving door of pressure and sacks being given up. That's got to be shored up. Now, they did make a conscientious effort in bringing in guys like Matt Gonclaves, who just got drafted in the third round. They're hoping he could develop to maybe be a starter at tackle. But I'm a little concerned for the Colts going into this regular season, still having those same tackles there. I hope for their sake that they're going to continue to develop and get better. And then you also got to look at, you know, who's going to help Richardson out in the run game, not just himself, but also everybody knows Jonathan Taylor. This offense is built to score points. This offense, on paper anyways, looks like it's going to be difficult to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, and you bring up the offensive line. That has been their kind of Achilles heel, Joe. You know, getting a lot of the hurries and things like that and not a lot of time. And that's where Gardner Minshew kind of actually has excelled because he can get out of the pocket enough and be that bit of a mobile guy to make some plays for you. And it's been able to, you know, to do that. You know, Joe Flacco, he's the opposite side, though. So, I mean, when you talk about, you know, a veteran being there, I get that. And that will help your young quarterback, you know, on top of it, because Joe Flacco kind of at first started out when rookie guys were coming in, he was like, nah, I ain't having that. I ain't no teacher. You know, I'm trying to take this just starting job. Since being off and then, you know, even coming back, he's changed his demeanor a bit. So I'm sure he'll take Anthony Richardson in open arms and help him there too. But I think Richardson's the guy for this type of offense. We saw what it did with Gardner Minshew, and I wasn't sure what we were going to see out of Steichen here. Yes, you know, it worked in you know, with the Eagles. I get that. But how is it going to pertain to this team? It worked really well, but the one thing they need to do is improve on third down. They're 26th ranked in third down conversions and 30th in fourth downs too. So they need to be able to get, you know, the chains moving and stay effective. And like you said, the key though is that running game. It's nice that they have some actual weapons here, you know, to in the receiving thing. But Jonathan Taylor, again, only started, I think it's 7 games last year. He's got to get it going here and stay healthy and be that guy for him. So if they can do that, revolve that offense around him, and then Richardson can get it out to those wide receivers. That is the key for this team to have success.
Yeah, and the other concern for me, too, is when you look at Jonathan Taylor, if he gets hurt, there's really no star-studded depth behind him. There's a lot of retread type of running backs that are all going to be trying out to make the team, for one, and for two, trying to carve out a role somewhere here. You look at their tight ends, which – the Colts haven't had a really good tight end since like the days of Dallas Clark, if anybody remembers him. A guy that didn't wear gloves, caught everything with his bare hands. But they have a couple up and coming guys. Like we've seen Mo Alie-Cox kind of emerge as one of these kind of go-to tight ends in the passing game only. Guy's he can't block, so he's limited. The one kid that I'm interested in that they drafted in 22 is Jelani Woods, where he's a guy that could do both, can block, but he's also got tremendous size and is seen as a receiving threat. So keep an eye on him. Defensively, if you look at their roster, you're going to see a lot of like, who the hell's that type of player? Where if you don't pay enough attention to the nuances of players and where they end up and how well they play, after you look at the defensive line, got a lot of well-known names. DeForest Buckner coming over from the Niners. Samson Ebukam, who's pressure edge rusher,
right?
Teaming up with Kwity Paye on the opposite side, along with Grover Stewart, who's locked down in the middle. They are one of the better D lines in football, hands down. Yeah.
They both had double digit sacks last year.
Yeah, they managed to unlock not just that talent there, but also they could have possibly gotten a steal in the draft in Liatu Latu. To kind of put him into this rotation of pass rushers and put him in on just passing downs this year as a rookie, mm-hmm. learning from the vets there as well as attacking the quarterback. The one concern that a lot of teams had, and that's why he kind of slipped in the draft a little bit, is consensus-wise was seen as the best pass rusher, but didn't go until later in the first round with where the Colts were, and that's due to a neck issue that he had in college. Very concerning. I know, like, you know, that a lot of teams they definitely worried about the fact of, like, well, what happens if he re-injures it? Could it be career-ending? That is concerning. But from the Colts team doctor's point of view, they were very conscientious about it. They looked into it very deeply, and they don't have as many concerns as other teams do. So they might have potentially gotten a steal. And if he stays healthy, and that's what we all want, it'll be an absolute amazing pick for them going forward. Linebackers, on the other hand, guys that maybe not a lot of people know, or if some Colts fans might not know these guys, but E.J. Speed and Zaire Franklin, two linebackers that are very good and work extremely well in this defensive scheme. They're sideline to sideline type linebackers, read and react type guys, and are always around the football. So, and then you couple them up with the secondary on the back end. Guys that, again, mm-hmm. linebacker-wise, secondary-wise, not all household names. Obviously, Colts fans are going to know Julian Blackman.
Yeah, absolutely.
Obviously, Colts fans are going to mm-hmm. know Kenny Moore the second. But when you look at the rest of the guys like Jalen Jones, they play within the scheme. They do their job. Juju Brents, also very solid. And Nick Cross at free safety. So they have some guys that are unknown but might become known as of this season, where they might show you some things that you're not used to in the back end of the Colts defense. We know that after Stephon Gilmore moved on from the Colts, and everybody was so worried about the hole that he opened up here. But nobody really paid attention to this back end of this Colts defense last season, where mm-hmm. some of these youngsters stepped up and played admirably well. This defense, on paper anyways, when you look at them, man, oh, man, there's not a weakness. There really isn't. Like, you might maybe make the case for some of these younger corners and you're not really 100% sure on, but I tell you right now, this is one of the better and well-kept or well-put-together defenses in this division and maybe even the conference.
Yeah, and you talk about him real quick, and just before we move on, Julian Blackman last year, 88 combo tackles, 4 interceptions, 2 fumble recoveries. So a really great season for
him. Nose for the ball.
And like you said, Kenny Moore on the other side too, also 3 picks for touchdowns. So 2 of them were 2 pick 6.
Yep.
So that secondary is good on top of that front line. So, I mean, that's all you need, because like you said, you get that pressure, you're getting the sacks. If you're not, you're pressuring them enough to make a mistake, and then you're getting those picks by that secondary right there, and the secondary is holding them off in like a zone and things like that. So big for them. Excited to watch the Colts again coming up this year with their quarterback. All right, next, let's move on to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Talking about quarterback, Jim, Trevor Lawrence gets his big-time deal. A lot of people had a lot of things to say about it. Is it too much money for the guy? Like, you know, what are you guys thinking? You know, has he leaped over that hurdle of helping this team get to where they need to go? Well, it's not all his fault. A lot of it came down to like that offensive line getting injured last season and not really had an answer after that point. You look at Travis Etienne Jr., who was the key cog in that running back position, where he was kind of like the go-to guy, whether it be handing it off or giving him the ball in the open, throwing it to him. So a lot of things went badly last year for the Jaguars, a team that we kind of envisioned before the season came, where I was like, okay, well, this team, pretty much we think the Jaguars are going to win the division. Well, that didn't happen because of the lack of execution down the stretch. Trevor Lawrence is included in that too. Like, he didn't help his team much either. Sometimes he turned the ball over in the most crucial of plays in certain game situations, and that cost them some games. They were ahead early and then fell to a team where a very young team in the Houston Texans for them to take the crown. Now you look for them to kind of re-up, and that's where you notice is like there was some major concerns offensive line-wise. What are they going to do? They have a lot of holes. Well, they end up filling those holes with not just veteran players, but also vets that can still start for a team, that can still be key cogs. As of this year, they get at left guard Ezra Cleveland, Mitch Morse at center, and Brandon Scherff at right guard. Locking up that interior offensive line, which was once a major concern, now is solidified going into this, into training camp and into the season. Couple that with both tackles, Cam Robinson, again, guy that's kind of been injury riddled, but is coming back healthy this year. You hope that he can sustain that. Anton Harrison, a young player drafted in 23, now being given the reins to start at right tackle. Let's just wait and see how he's going to pan out. And then you look at the receiving core. That would have been another major concern this offseason, is they had a lot of holes. They had DJ Chark, who moved on in free agency, and they managed to replace him with a guy like Gabe Davis coming over from the Bills, a very tall, big size type of wide receiver that has speed. And then Christian Kirk's still there, kind of like the favorite target of Trevor Lawrence. Look for him to continue his success. And rookie draft pick this year, Brian Thomas Jr., who is not only a big wide receiver, but man, is he fast. He's a playmaking type of wide receiver, still needs to develop his route running game. But once that clicks and he gets this playbook down, he's going to be something to deal with for defenders. And I really love what they've managed to do in terms of replacing some of these receiver holes and whatnot. And then
I'm interested just to see, though, too, because you missed Calvin Ridley, though. I mean, that's going to be a little bit of a factor here, I think, on this, though. But
that's like where you get the playmaking ability from Brian Thomas.
Right. So then they're fine. But, I mean, but to lose, you know, somebody like him on top of this, you know, I mean, that's big.
I would have said yes. I would have completely agreed yes if they didn't get Gabe Davis, another proven veteran receiver who can also kind of open up some things where Brian Thomas Jr. doesn't have to be the guy this year.
If
they weren't able to grab Gabe Davis and it was just Brian Thomas and Christian Kirk, then I'd be like, he's going to have a lot of pressure on him to be that guy. But now that you have Gabe Davis in there, Christian Kirk, you have guys that you can rely on as veteran wide receivers that can get the job done while Brian Thomas still kind of develops and figures his way out in the NFL. So I'm not as concerned of that loss as I might have been had they not gotten Gabe Davis.
Okay.
And then the other thing, too, is I know a lot of people joke about tight end and Evan Engram and how as a Giant, yes, you're right, he was injury-riddled every single season for the Giants. Never end up having a healthy year for them, and kind of the Giants got fed up with it, and rightfully so, and moved on from him. Now he's with the Jaguars and had a tremendous year last year, staying healthy and just making play after play. Yeah, there were some plays where, like, he had a couple drops here and there, but I'll tell you right now, if he remains healthy like he did last year, he's going to be another big influential part of this offense. And it's only going to help Trevor Lawrence. It's only going to help this offense grow and develop and score points.
Yeah, I can agree with that, too. He definitely has been better than when he was with the Giants.
Because he's been available.
Right, yeah. So that's funny. Then that's your litmus test here for you. But you're available. That's so much better than what you were before. Thanks. Like, all right, at least I'm here. With the bar set so low, you can always be up here. And that's where we've got it here with Evan Engram.
He's always had the talent, though. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, even with the Giants, you saw the talent from time to time, but then you're like, oh, he's out again. Mm-hmm. How long is he out for? Mm-hmm. 8 weeks. What? Like, we were counting on him being available.
Right.
You know?
Right. Right. And then the thing is with this team and this offense here, before you get into the defense, Trevor Lawrence, he was injured for a little bit, even with the legs. And that when you look at Trevor Lawrence, he's still even got that little bit of a mobility, but that was enough to kind of bring him down a little bit. But still, look at stat-wise, still even performed. But in those bigger moments, like you're talking about,
right,
where he feels he is this guy that has to come here for the Jags and bring them to the promised land, bring them out of the rut to where they've been not the laughingstock of the NFL, but pretty close, where they're talking about relocating them to London. They play there so much. So he's like, listen, I got to do this and put it on my shoulders, just like what Josh Allen does in Buffalo, I'd say, and making those key turnovers in terrible moments. and not really having that big wide receiver. Last year, he was able to have the Calvin really get through here. Like you said, with the changes, that Gabe Davis is nice to add in there, and I like that move because I like him as a receiver, but he hasn't been that number one, especially in there, but in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested in how this is going to look here with this team, with if he's got a bunch of nice weapons here, but not that key number one. Like you're saying, hopefully Brian Thomas can develop into something nice here too.
He will, yeah.
But you know, that's the thing that Trevor Lawrence has been missing here.
He has, but to a point. Like let's look at last season where he had Calvin Ridley, right? Kevin Ridley had an amazing season with the Jaguars. Jaguars were sad to have to let him go, and they couldn't afford to keep him. But at the same time, instead of making their receiving core just Kirk and Calvin Ridley, if it did end up in a contract agreement, now they don't have just one or two. They have a guy who's also an up-and-coming number one in Brian Thomas Jr., along with a guy who's been there, done that, in Gabe Davis, who can complement extremely well Christian Kirk. It's going to alleviate the pressure on just one side or the other, where when you look at last season, obviously defenses were focused on Calvin Ridley and stopping him, and not so much Christian Kirk while he was healthy. You know, that's the other thing, too, is that team was so badly injury-riddled that they lost weapons, they lost protection, they even lost Travis Etienne for some times, that that offense was spitting and sputtering, and Trevor Lawrence was supposed to find an answer somehow still. So I don't completely blame Trevor Lawrence for last season's kind of debacle of a lackluster offense. But at the same time, you wanted to see a step in the right direction for Trevor Lawrence last year, where he wasn't going to make as many poor decisions, wasn't going to create turnovers that much, even though – the offense was in no way, shape, or form ready to go. Mm-hmm. So for me, this upcoming year for the Jaguars, I need to see Trevor Lawrence take a huge step forward, because now you can't blame the offensive line. You can't blame the lack of weapons. You can't blame anything else for his lack of getting over the hump, getting some extra wins out of the deal, giving up even wins. So now is going to be the true test, and mind you, the Jaguars just gave him a 5-year extension, so they're all in on Trevor Lawrence, and you have a guy by the name of Mac Jones who's backing him up, which I think is a great move by Jacksonville, because even if Lawrence is to get hurt, I don't think they take a huge drop-off now that Mac Jones, once he gets situated, he can just kind of replace him and keep the ball rolling kind of like a Gardner Minshew. So I think that's an excellent insurance policy for Trevor in case of injury. But again, I want to see a big step up by him. I want him to limit those mistakes and get even more completions, smarter decision making, in the moment. And then I think the Jaguars are on the way offensively.
Yeah, and if you look at their defense, Joe, I mean, this defense kind of underrated too. I think they've been right there. They're top 10 again. Trayvon Walker again, another double digit sacks, last season. Really good.
Yeah, a guy who they weren't sure they were going to be able to re-sign him.
Right.
On the way out almost.
Yeah, and then they even add more talent this season, with Eric Armstead and more to and good talent. That's what I mean. Ronald Darby, you got these names that are just key players here. We've seen them play on other different defenses, and it's all around the ball to as if they weren't good enough with just Josh Hines Allen before. Now they've got these other guys around him, so he doesn't have to do it all, but he's still going to get it done. Joe, 17.5 sacks last year. This guy, we talk about Trey Hendrickson. This guy has got to probably be one of the other guys I think that is totally underrated, like doesn't get talked about enough just because he is there in Jacksonville.
I mean, I still think he gets his respect. He does get talked about once in a while because formerly Josh Allen, now Josh Hines Allen.
Who are they talking about?
Giving respect to both sides of the family, which that's pretty cool, I think. Guys just absolutely gifted and the corner piece of this defense, because I think if they let Josh Allen let him go and didn't give him the money that he was required to stay, this could have been a whole other issue because he's such an impactful pass rusher in this league, one of the better defensive ends that you could ever ask for. And then coupling him up, like you mentioned, Eric Armstead coming over from the Niners, which honestly, I'm kind of surprised of where Eric Armstead landed with the Jaguars. Mm-hmm. I thought he might go elsewhere. But, man, you team him up also with the likes of, like, Roy Robertson Harris, who's made his name known in Chicago, and a guy who I think now that they've assembled this defensive line this year with these two D tackles and how good they are, now you're looking at a very star-studded front seven for the Jaguars, where they don't really miss much. You look at their linebackers, Devin Lloyd, who's been there since 22, has made a name for himself there. Very solid player. I don't even know how to pronounce this dude's name, but Olakun, I'm going to say, from Atlanta. Another kind of underrated type of linebacker who's going to fit very well with this defensive scheme. My only concern, if I had any for this defense, is on the back end. Ronald Darby, kind of a journeyman corner. He worked extremely well with the Patriots. Then formerly with the Ravens, I'm kind of concerned with him being out on an island once in a while, and I'm not really sure if he's going to be the answer for them long term. But you got other younger guys on the back end with the safeties, and Antonio Johnson and Andre Sisco, guys that have proven to the Jaguars that they are the next up-and-coming youth at that safety position, which I'm comfortable there. Then you look at the other cornerback spot, Tyson Campbell, a guy who played well, but I'm not 100% sure with both these outside corners how well they're going to do going forward. That's my only real concern. Interesting enough, the Jaguars also made another addition at nickel corner, which is interesting because Darnell Savage from the Packers was their safety, is now going to come down into that nickel position, and it's not like he can't play. He's an amazing athlete. Also was seen coming out of the draft when he was draftable that he could play outside corner or safety or nickel. Jaguars are going to utilize him as the nickel corner to kind of lock down that slot of wide receiver. So I'm very intrigued on Darnell Savage. I think that's going to pay huge dividends for this defense. But as far as your outside corners, to me, they're still not ironclad for me. And that's pretty much the only weakness that I could kind of foresee for the Jaguars. I think they'll do fine. Because obviously you have a lot of talent surrounding them, where maybe you can camouflage them and help them out from time to time. But that would probably be my only kind of concern coming into this year. But other than that, yet again, in this division, another team that is very solidly built, and they're looking to come back now that they're healthy and try to make waves.
Make another push again. Yeah, absolutely. And then finally, that'll bring us to the – Tennessee Titans here in the AFC South Division. The Titans, it's going to be tough, I think, in this because it's so tight. Yes, such a tight division, and they move on from Mike Vrabel, which I think was a big key to this team. You know, I mean, he was everything. You know, I mean,
heart and soul.
Because you talk about the fact of not having a Derrick Henry, and that was your identity, and all that stuff. Mike Vrabel was a big part of that whole thing in his coaching style, the way he was. He is a professor of the game, you know what I mean? Knew many rules that people didn't even know that he held against Bill Belichick in the playoffs, who against him and beat him. So
He learned it from him.
So, I mean, now the student has become the teacher, you know what I mean? So, and to lose that, you know, I thought it was crazy for them to sign up to let him go, you know, and he's doing things even in Cleveland right now as an assistant to where I would not be surprised that he's going to move on somewhere else and become a big splash landing. Or possibly even be the head coach there. Yeah, potentially even though. But if that, you know, if they didn't do that extension here with Stefanski, I would have probably said that. You know what I mean? Because
I don't think that's that has any.
We've seen
how many coaches that have signed extensions that still end up losing their jobs a year or two later. So it's like maybe they've had the conversation with Vrabel, and that's why he decided to sign with them. I don't think it was lack of interest, for sure. Vrabel, I think everybody wanted a piece of. But I think they might have had a conversation where, like, okay, we're going to sign Kevin Stefanski for now. We'll see how this year goes. And he's got everything at his disposal. Defense is super locked in, top five defense, offense, on paper anyway. There's not a weakness there. So there's no excuses not to be successful. If you don't reach the playoffs, if you don't go deep into the playoffs, Kevin Stefanski, even though he signed that extension, I don't think he's out of the woods yet. So with having Vrabel kind of in the corner, so to speak, and waiting to pounce, like they might be quick to pull the trigger.
More deadly.
Where they'll be like, all right, well, Stefanski let us down yet again. We're gonna put the blame on Kevin, fire him, and Vrabel's gonna move in. So it's a possibility. I'm not saying it's gonna happen, but definitely got to be thought about for sure.
Yeah, so when you look at this offense, like I said, moving on from Babel, so you got a whole different thing, but they go and get Brian Callahan for their offensive coordinator, which is, I think, a smart move here, too, to try and work with Will Levis here and get him going. He started to show real good signs here last season, and I really like what this kid has to offer. And like I said, they're changing their identity a little bit. You know what I mean? They're not going to have to be so reliant on the run. They ranked almost dead last in the offense, so they really need to get this revamped here. And you've got some more additions here also on the offensive side, you know, to help out, you know, DeAndre Hopkins. When he was brought there and he signed there, I was kind of scratching my head. I'm like, oh, really, bro? Like, why'd you go there? You know, and now, you know, you see that, you know, they don't have Vrabel there. And they're like, oh, man, he's going there to die, you know. But they got Tyler Boyd now. And then we talked about just Calvin Ridley moving on from Jacksonville. Now he's there. So now I'm liking what these guys are doing. And Treylon Burks even now slides in that defensive or in that in the depth chart
fourth spot down.
There. So, you know, and then they, even some of those guys further down, you know, they've got some nice little guys just sprinkled in here for some backup. So that's definitely some more weapons than this team has had in a while here. And Tony Pollard, I think, to split time with Tajay Spears, I think, is a nice 1-2 punch in the backfield to help Will Levis, too. So I'm liking what this offense could potentially be here with Brian Callahan, Joe.
Yeah, it's a completely different equation in terms of the offense. It's a different. Fresh. It's a different group of talent than what they would be accustomed to with Vrabel still there. Now, the only problem that I have with the whole Vrabel situation is it's almost like they blamed him for not getting over the hump, but they were very competitive every single year that he was there. And honestly, could you really say that he had a quarterback that could definitely help carry this team? With Ryan Tannehill there during his tenure, Ryan Tannehill. Like he's kind of like an above average or at least average quarterback as a starter. Really wasn't gonna. They didn't throw the ball, so there was no weapons there. They bring in Hopkins, and now with getting rid of Vrabel and basically putting the blame on him, saying, okay, we're gonna move on. We're going in a completely different direction. We're gonna bring in Brian Callahan, formerly of the Cincinnati Bengals, a guy that's gonna bring that kind of style, that offense over here, at least similar. You notice the personnel change immediately. You mentioned Calvin Ridley already. DeAndre Hopkins was already there. Tyler Boyd, a consummate veteran, coming over. Now they have a very solid wide receiving core that that Brian is going to utilize with this kind of Bengal-ish offense that he's going to implement. And then you talked about Pollard and Tajay Spears. Very different running backs than what Tennessee Titans fans are used to. Not the battering ram type, not the guy that's going to throw people out the club and keep running, but a couple of men that are very elusive, very fast, twitchy, guys that can catch out of the backfield as well. So it's going to be interesting to see the chemistry and the creativity that Brian Callahan is going to implement with these new additions. And then offensive line was a big problem for the Titans for quite some time. And they were kind of trying to work through it while Vrabel was there. But now with Brian Callahan there, they already had Peter Skoronski at left guard, still a stud. But they managed to finally find a definite true center that can lock down and be a great player for their future. And Lloyd Cushenberry coming over from Denver. Nicholas Petit Friere is a offensive lineman that I have a concern with. I'm not 100% sure if he's the answer at right tackle. That would be my only concern. Other than J.C. Latham, who they just drafted this year in the first round, locked up that left tackle position, at least in their eyes. I'm not crazy about him going to the left side. I think he's more of a right tackle. But, again, we're going to see how this all pans out this coming training camp when we see preseason games. And hopefully it works out for them. But that's all I would say with that. And then Will Levis, I think Will Levis is going to be one of these guys where he showed us glimpses of being the guy. You know, he showed us glimpses of saying, well, I'm gonna ad lib if I have to. I'm gonna make things work, kind of like what Patrick Mahomes does, in a sense where when the play breaks down, he's got the legs to do it. He's also has the cannon for an arm to get the ball down the field. And now you have all these weapons. You have a great backfield behind you. And Levis has a great teacher now in Brian Callahan, who worked well with Joe Burrow, is looking to continue that success with the quarterback group. And I just think that it's going to be amazing for Levis to grow and develop this year. I think this Tennessee offense is going to be one of those kind of like under the radar offenses that not many people anticipate being this points piling type of offense where they're going to hit fast and quick and keep the tempo going all throughout the game. But man, I think on paper anyway, they definitely have the talent and they have the pieces in place. It's a matter of putting it all together this year. Obviously, Jim, you mentioned too about the offense is going to change. It's no longer going to be that run heavy style. And this is going to be more balanced. It's going to be kind of similar to what the Bengals run. But man, for once in Titans' long history, it seems like they're going to get out of the cardboard box that was just like, we're just going to play blue collar run football and go off of that and we'll win games as long as our defense holds up. Mm-hmm. Now it's going to be the defense is going to have to keep up with us because we're going to put up a lot of points and the defense is going to lick their chops because now they're just going to pin their ears back and come after everybody.
Yep. Yeah, and you talk about that defense. Everybody knows Jeffrey Simmons, but, you know, Harold Landry.
I don't think anybody really knows him.
But Landry was a key player for that team last year to help them out. And they were number one in the red zone last year, too. So, I mean, they were pretty good overall on the defense, but you saw it when it got to the red zone. They really put the pressure on. That's where those two guys really performed. But they add some more players, and I like what they did here. They go out and get Ladarius Sneed from the Chiefs, too, and that was big for them. Coming off his best playoff performance, I think, of his career. So it was big for him to come here, too. Chidobe Awuzie, everybody knows him, too, over there in Cincinnati. You know, I like that addition there, too.
And you see the connection there, too.
Murray, though, too, as well. Yeah, that happens exactly.
Happens with every new regime that comes in. There's always those relationships and ties. Right. And if a guy becomes available, they bring him over because they already know the scheme.
Right, and exactly. And even him being out there so long with Jamal Adams, adding him to at the last second here to see what happens.
Are you kidding
Whatever.
Me?
Why not? You know what
are
I mean?
Are you kidding me?
Absolutely.
That to me, that's tremendous value.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand people kind of put him into a box and say, oh, well, he's only an in-the-box safety. But me, that's all they are looking for.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And a guy who's still young, like 28 years old, I think that's an excellent signing.
Yep. So, I mean,
yeah. I'll just continue. Honestly, like, this is one of those very, very solid defenses before.
Mm-hmm.
And I tend to think that the defense from last season to this season – they got better in terms of filling holes out and not only just with vets like Awuzie, like Jim mentioned, like the fact that they traded for Legarius Sneed, who I think is going to pay huge dividends for them. But also nickel corner, they drafted him in 22. Roger McCreary is going to be that lock up guy that he doesn't have to be have to be kicked out outside anymore. He can always just stay at nickel and lock down. Amani Hooker at free safety has made a name for himself in Tennessee, is definitely going to be that star-studded type of safety who's going to go sideline to sideline in coverage and whatnot, makes great plays. Jamal Adams, though, adds that tenacity, adds that little bit of nastiness in the back end of this defense where going to be huge in run support, going to be huge in just flat-out demolishing people over the middle, and that's where he just makes his big-time plays, as well as you're going to see him utilize in blitz packages. Because he was super successful with that in Seattle. Look for that to continue with the Tennessee Titans. And then in the linebacking core, I will say this. What was interesting to me is they bring yet another guy who's very athletic in the middle linebacker in Kenneth Murray from the Chargers, a guy that can go sideline to sideline, can get after the football. And again, you look at athletic on the defense, there's a lot of athleticism and speed. And it's very tough to deal with when you're an offense that doesn't have that kind of combination at every single position.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be a little tricky. They're going to be difficult to deal with. But, man, I really like the direction of this defense. And then this year, they got a steal in my mind. And Tavondre Sweat, a nose tackle from Texas, who some people viewed him as a late first-round pick, ends up going in the second round with the Titans, and a guy who I think is going to play immensely well for this 3-4 defense. He is the perfect nose tackle for any 3-4, and he's going to be inserted there from day one and never going to leave once again. Very tough player to deal with, can take on double teams and what have you. Going to wreak havoc with guys like Jeffrey Simmons right next to him. So I love the pieces they put in place. I'm just curious to see how they can execute into the season.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely, Joe. So there you go. There's our AFC South preview. We have one more left in that.
One more, we're halfway. AFC
in that conference. We're halfway there, but we have, I think we were just reminded the other day by the NFL there are like about 50 days left until the NFL
season. Right.
So it's counting down. Fantasy is getting started. We're going to have some great guests for you. Back to back to back. So all these weeks, you know, coming up, we're going to have guests nonstop for you guys. So check that out for if you're in the fantasy too. You're going to learn a lot.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to see a lot. And Joe, tell us, tell everybody out there where they can find more shows like us and just more of us.
Yeah. More, if you listen, you want more of us. We're down for it, right? We got enough of us to go around.
Mm-hmm.
Head over to YouTube for Grumblings Media. Make sure you subscribe there. Give the thumbs up. You know, share the video, spread the word a little bit, and then don't forget to comment. Listen, we're live right now, and we love the comments when they come in, whether they be questions about – it could be off topic. It could be about the topic or something that you guys want to talk about. We're happy to bring it on the show and discuss it. Make sure you stay active that way. Listen, we're the most interactive NFL talk show out there. We want to prove it to you guys, so head over to grumblingsmedia.com. You can also check out – any other great show there while you're there, political, entertainment, sports, we got your back. YouTube and rumble.com. Also, you can take us on the go. Listen, I know the mornings get hectic. You got to get to work. You got things to do. You can take us to the gym or what have you. Make sure you go to the podcast. Anywhere you get your podcast, hit that follow button on Google, Spotify, Apple, and Pandora. And we're here for you guys. We're your NFL psychologists. We're here to help you guys get through all this nonsense.
Yeah, AKA the Blitz Boys, I guess, that we've been calling out there.
AKA Blitz Boys, yes.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you guys next time.